Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another Nacho Tuesday episode here with Alexandra of Cloudwork. And without further ado, Alexandra, would you be able to introduce your company and tell us more about what you guys do over there?
Hello, Andy. Thank you for having me, and thank you, everybody. Yeah, my name is Alexandra Camara, and I am the CEO at Cloudwork. Cloudwork is a fully automated time tracking platform for remote teams. We've been in the business for several years. We have overcome many challenges, and that's something that we would like to share so that hopefully it will be helpful for your companies as well.
Definitely. And so a lot of companies are starting to do a lot of outsourcing, you know, looking to work with freelancer talent. You know, why shouldn't companies be afraid of this? Why should they just go out there and just adopt this new movement, I guess, if you will?
Sure. Well, the advantages of outsourcing are huge. Basically, outsourcing is an excellent way to source the best talent. You don't have any geographic barriers. You can reduce costs. You will definitely have more flexibility, more scalability. You will be able to access to global talent. Obviously, you will have a larger talent pool. So there are so many advantages. Obviously, there are some challenges as well, but companies shouldn't be afraid because there are obviously tools that can help you overcome whatever challenge you may find when you outsource your team.
And definitely, tell us more about how your platform works, kind of how your what type of tools do you provide to kind of help streamline this process?
Sure. Basically, what we have is a fully automatic time tracking platform that you just need to download on the computers of your remote team or your freelancers. And once you download the software, it automatically communicates with the operating system, generating productivity metrics that will allow you to understand how much of the total working hours is being spent on the activities that really add value to your business. Because basically, when you outsource your team or you have a remote team, normally you don't even know what your team is up to. And you obviously need to make sure that they are focusing on the things that really add value to your business. So that's what Cloudwork does. It will help you to increase or to focus your team in the activities that really add value to the business. So it will basically impact your productivity, your efficiency, and obviously your profits.
Yeah, that's everybody loves that, right? So you touched on an issue there, right? So accountability, time tracking, that sort of thing. What other issues should your platform solve? What other issues should companies be aware of when hiring freelancers? You know, what should they look out for to ensure that it's a successful relationship and partnership there, if you will?
Sure. As I said, there are many advantages of hiring freelancers or outsourcing your team. However, if you don't have the right tools to control their productivity, obviously you may find or you may face some productivity issues. So you need to have the right tools to keep track of all what they're up to. Obviously, there are some other issues that you may find or you may face when you hire freelancers or outsource your team. There might be some communication issues, obviously, because normally if you hire freelancers abroad, there will be perhaps a language difference. There will be a cultural difference as well that may be a challenge. And obviously, you always kind of find problems with the quality of the work that you allocate. So there are tools that obviously you can use. In the case of Cloudwork, obviously, once you install the software and you know in real time what your team is up to, then you can obviously ensure that your team is focused on the activities that are really adding value, that people are working on the priorities of the company, and that lack of control that you may find when you have a remote team is sorted. So that's why we really recommend that companies around the world that have remote teams or that have freelancers always have a time tracking tool that help them focus the team in the activities that are really important and are a priority.
Yeah, and it seems like onboarding is going to be a key aspect of that too, right? You mentioned communication, just ensuring that there's a good, you know, understanding and fit between the two parties. You know, how critical is onboarding? Do you have any tips, I guess, for onboarding freelancers to make sure that they're set up for success? Because, you know, the worst scenario is that you bring on people and it's not necessarily their fault that they fail because they don't, you know, they don't understand what their objective is or have all the documentation they need. I guess, what tips would you recommend there so that your freelancers are best set up for success?
Sure. Well, what we have done in the beginning when we started hiring freelancers, then we used to meet all of them and used to onboard them. It was taking a long time. And basically, we noticed that the things we were saying were basically the same. Most of the things were kind of the same for everyone. So we created a document for onboarding that right now, whenever we just bring a new freelancer to the team, we just share that document where we talk about, you know, our company, our goals, basically all what we need them to know. And with that document, I mean, the onboarding is so, so quick. And that's one of the main advantages of you know, finding freelancers, because finding them, hiring them, and onboarding them is really, really easy if you just perhaps have a document that summarizes all the things that you need them to know. So that's a good practice that we have implemented, and it has saved a lot of time for us.
That's a great tip. I guess, where are some good freelancer centers, I guess, if you will, like based on skills? I mean, I know I've worked with Columbia, actually, and I happen to know that you guys have a lot of great developers down there, maybe why your company was founded from there. I guess, you know, where could you know, companies expect to find good freelancer talent, you know, both maybe designers, sure, developers? Where can they look globally?
Sure. There are many, many freelancers platform out there. However, after trying many of them, and I do not have any relation with them, I love Upwork. In the early days, basically we used it, we started finding the best talent. Obviously it works with feedback, so you can always find their feedback and their rating. So once you hire someone, you know how they have behaved with other companies. So I really recommend Upwork. Obviously there are some others out there, but to me, that's the best one.
Yeah, and they have a great talent pool as well. I guess, when should companies look to outsource freelancers? And can you explain some of the best roles that they could outsource for?
Sure. There are many roles that can be, you know, done by freelancers. But I think the main ones are writers, editors. Whenever you need a website designer, normally in our early days, we used to struggle because here in Colombia, we just couldn't find the best website designers. And once we found Upwork, we just discovered that, for example, in India, there are great website designers that their rates are really, really competitive and they get the job done so quick. So website designers, website developers, programmers, mobile app developers, online marketers, graphic designers, customer service representatives, virtual assistants, admin support, you name it. I mean, there are so many roles that you can find as a freelancer. And basically, as I said, normally, especially in developed countries, the salaries are really, really high. So companies can take an advantage just hiring someone overseas where salaries are considerably lower, and obviously this will give them a competitive advantage over their competitors or their local competitors. But those are the main roles that we have hired as freelancers.
Great. Just make sure you have the right tools in place to manage.
Exactly. Them. Absolutely.
I guess. So how did you start your company? What gave you the idea to start CloudWork? And I'd love to hear more of the backstory there for everyone.
Sure. Well, that's a long story, but to make it short, my husband, he's an electronic engineer. He said to me back in 2004, I want to do an MBA, but I want to do it in London, in England. At the time, I thought he was crazy, but he insisted. So we said, okay, let's go to England. Let's go to London. At the time, our oldest daughter was only 1 year old. So I said, okay, I go there, but I don't know how I will be able to work. Obviously, if my husband was doing his MBA, I became the main breadwinner, but I was also in charge of looking after my daughter. So basically, we decided to create an e-commerce business that I could run from home. Basically, I started importing computer parts from China, and I was selling them through eBay. As the company did really well, I started selling a lot, and then the time arrived where I had to hire someone to help me with customer service, with admin support. And then I started doing a research, and I found out that the salaries in England were really, really high. So I said, there's no way I will be able to compete in this market where basically the profit margin was really, really small. I said, I just can't afford to pay someone in England. So that was when I started speaking to my husband, and he said, why don't you just hire a remote team in Colombia? The salaries are really, really low, and you can have a team to help you with customer service. And that's what we did. We soon started to face productivity challenges, and basically the projects and tasks that I was allocating were not being done on time. And I was constantly worrying about their productivity. I spoke to my husband, and he said, okay, I'm going to hire a developer's team, and I will build a time tracking platform that will allow you to understand what they're up to so that you can help them focus on the activities that really add value to your business, that you can ensure that you have the right amount of people you need for the amount of job of the work that you have right now. So basically, that was how Elor started. He built the platform. As soon as we install it, we discovered that more than 60% of the working hours of our remote team were being spent on activities that did not add value to our business, that were not even related to our business. So we were losing a lot of money. Wow. I spoke to them. I said, okay, we are time tracking you, and we need you to focus on the activities that add value. So we became really productive, and with a team of only 6 people, we quickly achieved the $1 million yearly turnover. So the problem that CloudWorks solved for us was so big that we soon decided that we needed to sell it to other companies that could be facing productivity challenges as ours. So basically, that was how it all started.
Yeah, that's a great story. A lot of successful entrepreneurs I've talked to and, you know, known over the years, a lot of their stories kind of start from solving their own problem. You know, they're really close to that problem. They create a solution for it, and they realize that there's a lot of other people out there like them that have the very similar problem there. And I totally agree with you. I think that is one of the challenges of freelancer work is, you know, ensuring that they're getting good quality work done. Not that people are being dishonest, but just that they're being productive, that they're working on the things that they should be working on, and the work is streamlined, right? So I think you guys really identified that problem there. So even if you're saving money in some cases by, you know, hiring from overseas, you might be actually, you know, paying the same amount of money because of lost productivity.
Exactly. Perhaps even more.
Exactly. Yeah. No, a lot of people don't account for that too. So that's great that you have you guys created this tool that, you know, other people could actually utilize to avoid that problem. Right. I always like to say, I like to avoid failure by learning from other people's failures. So.
Exactly. And in regards to what you just said, there was one joke that a friend told me, because I said, I have a Colombian team and I have 6 people, but perhaps they're doing what one British person can do in one day. And then he told me, then CloudWorks helps you become 6 Colombian in 1 British person. He was kind of laughing because we were just comparing that in the UK, people are really productive, focused, and perhaps in Latin America, things are different. So we obviously struggle with the cultural difference, and that really, as I said, it helped us a lot. And right now we have helped many, many Latin American companies to become productive with our software. That's something that I think really add value to our economy as well.
Definitely. And what do you guys primarily serve as a market? You guys are global, correct? I would imagine.
Yes, exactly. I mean, right now we've been focusing in the Latin American market, but currently we have customers in over 40 countries worldwide. Yeah.
That have going from the eBay business to finding a scalable global software solution. You guys are very entrepreneurial. That's really cool to hear that story. I guess, have you had any experience with failure? Like, it sounds like you've kind of had a couple wins in a row, but you know, I'd love to hear about like failure stories too, because personally, you know, I failed before and obviously a lot. Anybody that hasn't failed before isn't trying, honestly, for you know, my opinion. But I love those stories because it tells you so much more about the grit behind people and a lot of their, you know, values that they have that takes them forward to the next project, which, you know, ultimately becomes their big success, I guess.
Exactly. Failure. I mean, we have faced failure so much in our journey. And I think that's something that really makes me happy is that people are starting to see failure as something positive. Yeah. I just don't see it as something that you should be embarrassed of. Yep. Because that's just part of your journey. And well, one of the biggest one, when we first started the company, I was in charge of calling companies and trying to get meetings. In our first meetings, to be absolutely honest, my husband used to show the platform and I used to sit just next to him praying because the platform was so slow that customers used to get really bored with a long presentation and sometimes the platform worked, sometimes it didn't, but I would just pray and pray and pray so that the platform could work at least. You know, at least we could show some of the metrics, but in the early days, it was really hard. And when we managed to get our first big customer that I did it, and it was really, really tough, the platform collapsed because there were so many users that the amount it was handling, it just basically didn't work. So basically the customer called me and said, okay, I was so happy because I was starting. I was giving you the opportunity. I know you're a startup and I was so happy I was going to use your software, but I guess you're not ready. That was one of the biggest challenges I think I faced. Obviously, my husband is my co-founder. I wanted to kill him because he was in charge of the technical part. I was in charge of the sales and marketing, and getting that customer was so hard that losing the customer was really, really tough. I just don't understand how I didn't divorce my husband. We're still married, by the way.
those tension points always build for a stronger relationship, actually.
And what happened was my husband, he did a big research, and he actually learned how to scale the users and how to support a large amount of users. And right now we have a large amount of users and the platform is working well. So I guess that pressure really helped.
Yeah, you don't know until you push it to the limits, you know what I mean? So, you know, Elon Musk is even, you know, shooting rockets up in the air and blowing a lot of them up. But a lot of people are like, oh, he blew up the rocket. And I'm like, they do that on purpose. They want to push the engineering limits to see how far it can go. So sounds like you guys had a good problem, actually, that resulted in failure. But you learned something from it. You got that scalability in there and redundancy. So, you know, now look at where you guys are at today. So you never would have known unless you had tried it. So
Exactly.
Yeah, I've been there before in sales presentations, you know, showing off like a new app. You know, I've launched, you know, myself, I've launched IoT companies, I've launched mobile apps, web apps, like all different types of things. And, you know, that first presentation, like with an early MVP, you know, like it almost like you can almost guarantee that there's going to be a big bug or something won't work. I've been in presentations where the thing didn't work outright. And trying to like, you know, recover from that, it's kind of funny. Just like, well, that isn't supposed to be happening.
Well, I guess when you're an entrepreneur, and I had many discussions with my husband because I am kind of perfectionist, and he told me, you cannot wait until the software is perfect to go and test the market. And I think that's something that the entrepreneurs always struggle with. Yeah. Because sometimes you just wait too long, and perhaps a competitor enters the market first and you just lost the opportunity. So I guess that those embarrassments that we had in the first meetings with customers were kind of constructive. They really helped us. Obviously, we got feedback, we improved the software. That was really embarrassing, to be absolutely honest, and I used to sweat and pray, and that was really, really, really tough. But I guess that that is the only way of doing it, because if you just wait until the software is perfect, maybe you just lost the opportunity.
Yeah, and you might not even have product market fit at that point. You might have such a perfect, you know, overbuilt platform, and then you realize that, you know, nobody wants it, or, you know, maybe you have to fix a bunch of things, actually. But, you know, fail fast, you know, move fast and break things, as they say. And, you know, like, perfect is the enemy of good. That's another saying as well, which means, you know, if you're too perfect, but you don't focus on just getting something out there and just fine tuning it, you know, just getting something that's good that actually works, you know, you'll never really actually achieve that proverbial perfection, if you will.
Absolutely. I will, because I like selling. So I used to just say to my husband, just let me speak to me. And I used to speak the features and say the features to the customers. And my husband, after the meeting,
we don't even have that.
Yeah, he told me, we don't even have that. Where did you, how did you make that up? And I was like, oh, we don't have that feature. It was really funny. But whenever the customer said, do you have that feature? I need it. Then he started developing it. So it was kind of hard work, but and funny as well. But
yeah, that's really, always the work between engineers and marketing people, is that the engineers are building, but the marketers are trying to like get fit with the customer and understand, you know, like how to give them the features that the customers are asking for. But the trade-off is, you know, sometimes marketers or salespeople want every feature and they go back to engineering, but they don't think through the feature and like think if it's really, you know, a feature that all their customers want, that's actually a big deal, as opposed to, you know, one feature one customer asks. So they're trying to really solve one customer's problem, but they're not thinking in terms of the overall architecture of the product, which the engineers are of course thinking of. So marketers need to get really good at, you know, getting these ideas from customers, you know, understanding what the customer's needs are, bringing back those key features to the engineers. And in some cases, you got to sell it before it's even made. You know, great story is the founding of Microsoft, actually. You know, DOS system was sold before it was even created, but they realized there was such a problem there and they knew their engineers can get on it. So, you know, obviously they sold it, I think it was to IBM before it was even made.
Yeah, I think in every company, the relationship between marketers and engineers are really, really tough. But especially here, being husband and wife, it was really, really tough as well. But we've managed to overcome those obstacles and we're here. And I think the journey has been great, despite all the challenges that we have faced.
Well, I think you guys are better because of it, you know, because I don't think I've ever met a couple that didn't go through their trials and tribulations that weren't better people because of it and had a better relationship, therefore, especially when you get to a point of success after all that struggle at a certain point, right? And then you see the work that you've done and that you've put together and have achieved together ultimately.
Exactly. Yeah, that's really rewarding. But there are many challenges to overcome.
I guess what other tips would you offer, you know, for SaaS founders to bring a product to market successfully? Obviously, you're an expert in the space and you've kind of been through the ring of fire, if you will. But what would you recommend for other SaaS founders out there?
Well, the first recommendation would be do your research before creating the MVP. Do not wait until your product is perfect to test the market, to go and visit customers, to get their feedback. Benchmark your competitors before doing something that you think is great. Just go and benchmark your competitors, because you may find that the thing you think is great may not be that great. You may not be solving a real problem. And sometimes you just find so many entrepreneurs that just spend a lot of time and money building something that they think they're solving an issue, but sometimes they just find when they just touch the market that they're not solving a real problem. Yep. I would advise you don't develop any features without validating the market first. Because in the beginning, we started developing features because someone said, and then we just invested a lot of money and we ended up with features that no one even used. Yeah. And the best advice I can give is that just try to be an entrepreneur if your heart asks you to do that, because the road and the journey is so tough that the only way you will enjoy it is that you really love what you're doing. And if you embark on the journey of being an entrepreneur, start with the idea that you will never, ever give up. When we started, we knew it was going to be difficult. We spent the first year without selling one single license. And obviously we did not have any income. We were a couple with two children. And obviously we had to make a living, but we, since the beginning, we said, even if we spend 3, 4, 5 years without selling anything, one of us will go and take a temporary job and we will make a living from that. But the other one will keep pushing with Cloudward, because we know that one day this will become a global company. And that's what we have thought since the beginning. So I guess that that's the most important tip or advice that I can give. If you're willing to do it, then I'm sure you will do it. And that's the most important thing. You need to be convinced of what you're doing. You need to love what you're doing, and do not ever give up, no matter what happens. Because we had really tough days, but we told God or the universe, whatever you want to call it, we are not giving up. And when you say that and the universe knows you're serious, it will help you. It will conspire.
That's why the power of vision and projection, right? Just kind of, you know, thinking through where you want to be, and then your body and your mind will kind of fall through in those actions to kind of get you to that place. But, you know, it's a lot of iterative changes, right? There's no overnight success. A lot of people see these success stories online and they're like, wow, that sounds so easy. I can go do that. Well, that might be the overnight decade of success for that.
Absolutely. Overnight decade.
Overnight decade. They've been working on for years, like even had maybe some failures that they learned a lot from, that they were able to take those lessons and apply it to the next product, which, you know, they make it look easy at that point. But, you know, who doesn't with a lot of experience at that point? So another key point you talked about too is, you know, not loving, you know, your features necessarily and the product that you built. I always say, like your product, love your customers, right? If you're really passionate about what you're doing and the problem that you're solving, you know, really, you know, get your customers involved, really listen to them. And if you really, you know, want to help people, which I think is at the core of entrepreneurialism, you know, trying to help people solve their problems. And if you focus in on that, really, really focus in on that, understand what they're looking for and what their expected experience is with your product, you'll end up making the decisions with your product and your features that align with that need. And ultimately, if you're helping people solve their problems, they'll pay you money for it. So now that's the most basic high level thing in entrepreneurship that a lot of people forget about, is that now at the end of the day, we're in business to help our customers and actually help people solve their problems.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So I guess what are some other obstacles, I guess, that people should look out for when starting a company? You had a couple of great ones there, but do you have anything else you'd recommend?
Yes, obstacles. So many obstacles, especially being in Latin America. Obviously, I guess that people from all around the world are listening to us. But here in Latin America, the main obstacle may be the access to capital.
Yep.
And obviously the fear of going global, because we are in tech. And we are competing with US and European companies and Asian companies. And being Latin America, we just kind of feel that we're not good enough. That's a big obstacle that we face. Perhaps it's our mentality. But I guess that whenever you create a startup, you should just believe in yourself. Believe that you're good enough, no matter where you're located, no matter where you come from. And that belief will help you get wherever you want to go. Finding capital or funding has been really tough. That's one of the main obstacles that companies face. But as I said, if you're not willing to give up, you just work hard getting customers. And even if you don't have an investment fund to invest in you, then go and speak to your customers. In fact, we did not get any big investment. Basically, we bootstrapped, and our investors are our customers. Instead of wasting time finding investors, we just decided to focus on selling. And if we were not selling, then we just said we need to improve the product that we have. We need to improve our sales skills, and we just focus on that. And we basically didn't even need any sort of funding to survive. We just focus on getting a great product that the companies would buy, and then we just leverage our efforts and focus on sales. And obviously, I do say that sometimes if you have funding, it will make your journey easier. It is not impossible to continue and to grow even without funding.
Yeah, I like your approach. You know, have your customers be your investors. You know, what a concept, right? yeah, I think a lot of people when they raise money too, they think it's the end all be all, and you know, you raise some money, but you lose your focus on like actually, you know, helping your customers. It's easy to, you know, build a team and do all these things with money, but it's also easy to distract yourself from the core mission. But if you focus on, you know, having your customers be kind of the ones funding your company, and you're actually solving the problems and they're actually paying you money for it, that becomes, you know, ultimately, I've seen a lot of those entrepreneurs that have to kind of go through that bootstrap motion tend to connect better with their customer's problem and build a better solution because of it. So there's definitely trade-offs between fundraising and not fundraising too, right?
All absolutely. And in fact, Andy, there's something that I would like to share. I've seen many companies getting huge investments, mm-hmm. and I see them now and they are not profitable. Yeah. And obviously what we did, we focus on being productive. We focus on having a remote team to reduce costs. We focus, what I did when I first started and I managed to find my first customers, obviously because we're a SaaS, they yeah. were paying monthly. I said, do you like my product? They said, yes, we're happy with the product. I said, why don't you pay 1 year in advance? I will give you a discount. And that was how it all started. Basically, that's they cool. started paying 1 year in advance. And that was how I said my customers are my investors. They believed in the product. They believed in us. And as I said, we focus on being creative, on being productive, no huge amount of employees, just focus on what we had to do. And we are profitable right now, even though we never found an investor. So that's something that I really I'm not really sure about those companies that get huge investments and they just focus on growing without even thinking what they are yeah. spending their money on. And yeah. they just became huge companies, but they haven't even reached break even. So yeah. that's not really the sort of company that I would like to have. Obviously, that's a personal decision, but...
And they get to a point to where they realize that their business model doesn't even work. You know, like 10 years down the line, they're like, wait, how do we actually make money with this?
Exactly. And obviously you're in business because you love what you do, but obviously you're in business because you want to have profits. That's true. That's what we do. So that's something that I would also advise to other entrepreneurs that focus on being competitive, don't have more employees than the one you have, outsource. Look for talent worldwide. You will reduce costs. You won't pay any rent in offices. And obviously that will help you be more profitable in your business.
So what's next for CloudWork? And where can people learn more about your guys' company and get you guys for time management and keeping their freelancers on the same page with you guys?
Well, we're growing globally. As I said, we have managed to find customers in over 40 countries. And we basically see CloudWork as a global company leader in productivity management and time tracking for remote teams. We hope to keep getting customers in new markets worldwide. Basically, in Latin America, we have focused on finding partners to sell our software. We have only done it in Latin America so far, I mean, finding partners. Now, my main goal this year is to find partners in the US, in Europe, and Asia. So that's our next step, and that's the step that we need to take if we want to see CloudWork as a global company very soon.
Well, we're happy to be a part of your guys' journey, and we're glad to be a partner with CloudWork, Nacho Nacho, the B2B SaaS marketplace, the best place to buy SaaS because we have great products like yours in there. Highly recommend everybody check it out today in our SaaS marketplace. We've had the pleasure with being a global company here, a global marketplace to work with the best software products wherever they come from. And honestly, I've worked with Columbia for years. They have great developers down there. They have a great culture. Don't think that you can't compete against America in terms of software quality and everything. I've seen a lot of great stuff come out of Columbia. So
thank you, Andy. Yes, absolutely. Sometimes you do feel that it's hard to compete with Americans and Europeans, but as I said, we have to believe in ourselves and we will get there.
Well, I think a lot of Americans tend to be a little cockier. Sometimes it's warranted. A lot of times it's not too. So just because people act confident, they don't deserve too much credit usually. So what you guys have done is you guys have really built something, you know, brick by brick from the ground up, you know, and that's to me is a true entrepreneurial journey and, you know, one that warrants a lot of respect, honestly.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Andy. And thank you for having me. I hope the information we have shared is useful for everyone. And well, if you need to time track your freelancers, don't forget that here at CloudWork, we're here to help.
And it's right there in her name too, by the way, everyone, cloudwork.com. Alexandra, thank you again so much for coming on today. And we look forward to being long-term partners with you guys and growing together.
Thank you for having me. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Cool. There we go. That was